Shouldn't we be smashing all kinds of patriarchy? Was Twitter's Jack Dorsey played? The nutcase who got killed by tribals? And the BBC getting schooled? All this and more coming right up. Good morning or good evening. This is episode 17 of the Attention Please podcast on Talking Stuff Network. I am Vikram Mohan. If you're listening to this while driving, I hope the traffic isn't too bad. We have a very interesting episode today because the news has been rather interesting. And of course, Arnab has a knack of spicing up even the dullest news. So let's get our host, Arnab. Welcome back, Arnab. How have you been?
I've been good. It's the long weekend this night right now. It's Thanksgiving, which is when Americans celebrate the genocide of the indigenous population, who are ironically known as Indians. And of course, we Indians, I did have a Thanksgiving Day dinner, and many people have a problem with Indians coming in and kind of trying, you know, what's Thanksgiving to you? Of course, it's nothing to me. It's just any occasion to eat and get, you know, and have a little bit of alcohol. It's just that, you know, I took the whole week off. And I'm in a particularly good place of my cell phones were failing, both of them, both me and my wife. So we've ordered new cell phones. So a lot of things which I had to get off my, you know, which I had to deal with, I've dealt with, but there's so many other things I need to do. So I'm feeling a little good today, which is good to start a podcast off with. Again, for those of you who are joining late to the Attention Please podcast, we have a Patreon page. The link is at the bottom of the podcast, where we solicit monthly donations. I have to say this every time when we start. So if you like the show, if you want to support it, and I think one person on Twitter, he said I should make this more clear as to why I ask for donations. So the reason why I ask for donations is this. It's not just as a validation. It is true that, you know, it feels nice that somebody validates, and there's no better validation than with your wallet. But it's also the thing that ultimately I have a little bit of a dream, which is to take this podcast of mine and kind of expand it to something which is much bigger. I would want it to be kind of a centrist political platform with culture and Bollywood, the things which I like to do, but make it more formalized, so that we can have research, we can pay people to do research, we can have original content, to make it into a media platform. Right now it's just just two guys with a mic and we have guests. So in order for us to do that, what you really need is you need investments from people who have money. And the first question that people who have money, when you come up with a business idea, is how many people are willing to pay for your idea? So they want users and an user base. And when people pay for that, it's even better. If you have free users, it's okay. But then for free users, you have to show like hundreds and thousands of free users. So this is a start. I mean, I don't think, because I'm a pessimist and I've been burned too many times in life to, you know, hope. But the reason why I ask, and maybe I shouldn't have made it, I should have made it a little bit more clear, is to create an interesting investment proposition for somebody who would want to invest in a podcast, so that we can expand this technically, so that, you know, we can have better equipment, also so that some people have asked for video. Again, there's nothing which prevents us from doing it except the cost and the logistics. And of course, more guests, some kind of advertising, so that we have a bigger reach. Again, all of this is way in the future, and I'm kind of fishing out here. But this is the reason why I want paid users, because it allows me to show an investor that the minimal viable product still has this amount of registers users who are willing to pay for the content. And that might be, again, I say might be, something which they might find interesting. Anyways, moving on to today's content. So our first section, as always, is this actually happened. So a lot of things actually happened, and things which I really couldn't believe happened. One was You know, there are two items today. One is about a jack and one is about a jackass. So let's first talk about Jack. So Mr. Jack of Twitter, I just like to refer to him as Mr. Jack, like Bob Christo used to be referred to as Mr. Sam. He came a visiting to India. It was a very clueless, I don't know why he was in India, but he came and he met, you know, the current king, the would-be king. And I guess he was trying to be Zuck, but Jack isn't there yet. So he ultimately, I didn't know why. I honestly don't know why. I think it was because of PR. This is a big market. This is an expanding market. So he wanted to give it the personal touch. And just like pretty much everything that Twitter does, exactly the opposite thing happened. So for those of you who haven't been following the story, there was a picture which became viral on social media, which was Jack holding a poster which said "Smash Brahminical Patriarchy." Now, first of all, you know, before even going into the poster, for a CEO of a global concern, which doesn't sell coffee or you know or furniture, but which provides a platform, and whose USP comes from mostly from political discussions, it's very important that the arbiters of the platform at least pretend to be neutral. It's important. I'm not saying they're neutral. Everybody knows that Twitter has its biases and they've themselves acknowledged it. But given that they've acknowledged it, it becomes even more contingent upon them to show that they're kind of neutral. And again, in this case, I'll give Jack the benefit of doubt. He had no idea what was in his hand. I'm pretty sure he doesn't know what Brahminical means. But he decided to hold that. It was not so much an F up on Jack's part, but of people surrounding him. That honestly speaking, from a purely political point of view, there was nothing to be gained by holding that poster. If he really wanted to smash Brahminical patriarchy, he should have held it up. So he was just holding it down like, you know, somebody gives you a bouquet of flowers, you don't know where to put it. So you're just kind of holding it there. But you know, what he had been given was not a bouquet of flowers. And somebody who wasn't Jack, who's more aware of what those words mean, should have been there to make sure that it was not in his hand when the picture was being taken. And the picture was a posed, it was a posed picture. It was not somebody just took a picture of him while he was given this banner. Okay, this was a consciously taken posed picture. And so there should have been some amount of control. And I guess their reaction was, we didn't think this picture was going to be public. Well, what do you think when you're posing with so many people, including, you know, the doyen of Indian journalism, Barkhadat, you know, they're all prominent people standing there. And this is not a private event in that sense. And the picture is being posed for. So, you know, of course, it's going to get out. And Twitter made it, you know, they then apologized. Again, I don't think they needed to apologize. They needed to apologize, not for the content, but for being incompetent. But let's now come to the notion of Brahminical patriarchy and what my personal problem is. Now, if he had held up, if the slogan was smash patriarchy, I don't think anybody would have a problem. If it was a smash the caste system, I don't think anybody would have a problem. If it was Dalit Lives Matter, I don't think anybody would have a problem, because I think most sensible people agree that patriarchy needs to be smashed, that Dalit Lives Matter, and for this, you know, that we haven't solved the problem of caste system, as we like to sometimes claim, especially to our American friends. Oh, it doesn't happen in India anymore. That's not true. It does. You know, look at elections. It's there up front and center. And I don't think anybody has a problem with smashing those things. Again, the problem might be of Jack holding up such a poster, but the abstract concept, I don't think anybody has a problem with it. The problem is the word Brahminical patriarchy. So, you know, I've read a lot of, you know, people who are talking about this don't, you know, they're idiots, they don't know. Of course, anybody who doesn't understand what Brahminical patriarchy is an idiot. But, you know, I understand that I'm an idiot and I'm not well-read. But moving forward from that, my problem is that Brahminical patriarchy, apparently the narrative on the other side has got nothing to do with Brahmins. It's basically a catch-all for all patriarchy. And they refer to some publication in EPW in 1993. Now, here's my problem with it. And I think one of the problems was, well, if he had said smash white supremacy, and if you then had protested, then you would have been caught. Like, you are then basically saying that you are a white supremacist. Oh, okay, you got me there. Now, here's the problem with, and this is a problem which people have when they in that this Netflix and Amazon Prime generation, they cannot, parse Indian events in their own context. They always have to link it to something in America, something which Jon Stewart has said, something which, you know, this is so pathetic because they don't match. Okay, this US has a very different, and the US and Europe have a very different history than we do. So white supremacy and Brahminical patriarchy aren't the same thing. And here's the reason why. In America, so let's just restrict ourselves to America. Supremacy has always been white. There has been never any time in which blacks or Hispanics or any other group have, for even a day, had hegemony over whites. That has never, ever happened. Okay. So the notion of supremacy and the adjective white, they are, the correlation between them is 100%. So supremacy means being white. It has never happened that, for instance, that blacks have lynched whites. That has never happened in the country. Okay. So it has never happened that there are sections of the country where blacks have had an overwhelmingly supremacy in terms of ruling, in terms of privilege. That has never happened. Even in the most liberal of states, it has been white, 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 white. Okay. It has taken the US so many hundreds of years to have had a black president. Okay. And even that was something which was fairly controversial and led to a white lash and the present incumbent coming and becoming the president. How unsuited he is for the job, we all know. So, in the US context, it makes sense. But in Indian context, unless your supposition is that patriarchy is also 100% Brahminical, that nobody else practices patriarchy, that patriarchy is not practiced by any other caste, it's not practiced in Islam, this correlation is not true. By saying it's Brahminical patriarchy needs to be smashed, you are saying, You're basically assuming, I mean, I'm not going to be naive and say you're saying that Islamic patriarchy doesn't need. No. You're basically associating all patriarchy that happens in India with Brahminism, with being Brahminical. So I have a question. I just can't compute this. So when we did, are you trying to say that Shah Bano suffered from Brahminical patriarchy? I think you are, in a way, because I think you're basically redefining anything which is bad is Brahminical. Brahminical is like the Darth Vader. Okay, so if something's bad, it's Brahminical. That is the problem that I have, because there are actually Brahmins in this country who are, you know, it's true that Brahmins have had privilege. It's true that there's no denying about it. It is true that many of the patriarchal customs have Brahminical origins. That's also true. There's no denying it. But to kind of say that smash Brahminical patriarchy, where patriarchy and Brahminical are absolutely 100% correlated, that's not fair in my mind. And you may try to justify that and say, you know what, it's never, that's not what the term means. And I'm an idiot, so maybe I don't know. But if, as an idiot, when I hear the word Brahminical patriarchy, that's what I suppose it means. That's why you didn't have something which says Islamic patriarchy. Okay, why not smash Islamic patriarchy? Is that not a problem? They would say, well, you know, we could have said it, but we didn't. And why didn't you? Because I'll say why you didn't. Because despite what you say, despite what you now claim to say, Brahminical patriarchy, the word Brahminical is used as a pejorative to denote patriarchy, even though it could be in an Islamic society. In India, of course, this is all scoped in India. And while, again, this is not a new phrase, this is not the first time I'm hearing this, and, you know, people are free to use it. People are free to think that all evil comes from Brahmins. That's, you know, okay, all right. You know, it's your opinion. I don't have to agree with that. But again, it comes to the fact is, should the owner of a platform, should the CEO of a platform like Twitter be caught in public, not even holding that, but kind of, you know, as a side note, just holding that poster. I think this was overall incompetence from Twitter more than anything else. Rest of it, is it a big deal? No. It just leaves, and we use Twitter, all of us, just leaves a sour taste and just kind of shows that Jack is somebody who's, I'm pretty sure he's a very rich guy, but he's not really, let's say he's not the brightest bulb in the box.
I was saying he was in India for a pretty long time, right?
Yeah, he was in India for pretty, and I think because this is a growth area, they want to. I think somebody told him you have to go and you. But I don't think. I think he was pretty clueless. I think based on even other things that I heard, he was like pretty clueless about India. He was just here on a PR trip. It was okay. It was an anodyne PR trip. But then, as I said, with Twitter, everything flips around. So again, moving away from Jack to the jackass. So there was a jackass who recently got killed in the Andamans. What he did was, it was amusing that he was basically a Christian missionary. He was one of those crazy Christian missionaries who really want to spread the flag of Christ to places where it has not been taken.
The savages.
And this time, yes. And this time he really, like Captain Kirk looking for the final frontier, he really took the Enterprise to a place where he shouldn't have taken it. And he ended up getting killed. Again, first of all, I would like to say that there's no justification. I mean, he was there illegally. The Indian government does not allow anybody to go into those islands. But that does not justify. Just because he's illegal does not justify him being killed. Those who killed him need to be, doesn't matter if they decide that they govern by their own laws. It doesn't matter. They're still on property. They're still on something which is controlled by India, and they do fall under the jurisdiction of Indian laws, and you can't kill a person, no matter how unwelcome that person is. So I have no sympathy for the tribals who killed this gentleman. I think he's a jackass, but jackasses don't deserve to be killed. They just deserve to be called jackasses. And in a way, it's not the same as the guy who jumps into, there was a guy in Alipur Zoo in Calcutta who decided to jump and garland a tiger.
Yeah.
Of course, the tiger mauled him in public and killed him. But, a tiger is an animal. So, you, in a way, in that case, I would say that the guy who jumped into the tiger enclosure is to blame for his death, not the tiger. But in this case, that's not the case. These are people. These are human beings. They're citizens of India, whether they want to accept it or not, and they do fall under its laws, and they should be punished to the full extent of the law. Not just them, but the people who brought this guy to that island also. Because he just didn't fly into that island. But what I find interesting is that because, first of all, I don't know if you saw it, but Scroll, of course, I don't know if they changed the headline, but their first headline didn't say that he was a missionary. It was inside. They called him an adventurer. I think many people are still calling him an adventurer. Even though CNN, by the way, in America, they called it the Communist News Network. They called him a missionary. But the Indian liberal media were kind of hesitating to call him a missionary. But once, and it was pretty obvious that was why he was there. He was not just some, I don't know if you've seen Vikram, but there are some, crazy people who do crazy things. There was a few months ago, there was some couple who decided that they wanted to, bike through ISIS lands to show that, there's nothing wrong. And then they got killed. They didn't even make it into ISIS. They got killed before that. So, but that was not so much to spread the word of Christ. That was, I would say borderline insanity. But there was a specific motive for that. It was borderline insanity to go there, of course. And I think this jackass, besides of course being extremely religious, also didn't do his research. That was also one of his problems, I guess. But what I found interesting is that suddenly the liberal media is raising this question that these tribes need to be assimilated. Why are they not being assimilated? Wait, hold on. Isn't one of the liberal arguments that I've heard for so many years is that native indigenous people need to be respected and given their lands and given the right to do whatever they want, in the sense that it's, and I agree with that. If as long as they obey the law, that they don't kill other people, if they want to stay detached from society, if they want to maintain their way of life, their culture, as long as it does not affect anybody else, they are free to do so. And again, when you think, I heard this NDTV Vishnu Shom is, saying, do the tribes need to be assimilated? Now, you think they need to be assimilated once a missionary has been killed? Isn't that a little bit too convenient? First of all, though, your whole argument was that they do not need to be assimilated. This was what we had heard all along, that, you know, that as a matter of fact, assimilation is bad. Assimilation is capitalist, nationalist, whatever. Insert your favorite adjective here, conspiracy to basically mainstreamize all forms of diversity in this country. For me, in this case, it's a question of consent. If a tribe on their own lands, if they want to maintain a certain standard of life, a certain way of living, which we might find unacceptable, ununderstandable, that's fine. That's where tolerance of other beliefs comes in. As long as they're within the broad, and again, do we know that they're obeying the law in a deserted island? No, practically we don't. So long as their bodies don't come washing up on the shore. But as long as there's a semblance of law and order, let me be, you know, as honest as possible, I think it's okay. I think people should be allowed to live life as they want to, you know, especially indigenous tribes. They deserve to have some rights. And again, the thing is that the state does not have the right to assimilate them forcefully. Obviously, as has been demonstrated there, they do not want to be assimilated. I think that they have made very clear to everybody. Even the jackasses should be seeing this straight in their face. They don't want to be assimilated. So any form of assimilation would entail violence at this point of time.
I think the last time there was news about this particular tribe was during the tsunami, where they were thought to be wiped out. I don't remember any news being about, you know, that time when we were worried about them being wiped out, that they should be assimilated, even when they were bordering on, you know, getting extinct. I don't know if that's the right term for humans too.
No, that's the problem. You know, this is the problem. The moment you have, and unfortunately, there's no other way I can interpret it. The moment you have a missionary being killed, suddenly the question is turned on its head. Suddenly this is now a point of debate. Should the tribes be assimilated? Which is, again, as I said, absolutely counter to the position that we have always heard, and a position that I personally agree with, that they should not be, that they have rights to their native lands. They can, of course, you know, there's been a lot of controversy with mining and in other places. This is not just a controversy in India. It's happened in the US. You know, how do you deal with the rights of indigenous peoples? I'm not saying there's a simple answer for that, but the simple answer is that they should not need to be assimilated. How exactly? And in this specific case, when they absolutely do not want to be assimilated, how exactly do you assimilate them without the use of force? I think this question is redundant in this case. And it, again, the fact that this is brought up shows, and I don't need to hammer this every time, shows that, you know, our liberal media can be many things, but unbiased, they're not. Which brings me to our feature story about the media and fake news. So recently, BBC came up with this data-driven analysis, which purported to show that the right wing, and again, it's not very clear as to what they mean by right wing, but there's a lot of problems with this whole study, of course. I was one of the first persons to, you know, point out one of the biggest problems. And there have been several deconstruction, or rather taking apart their research methods. But their basic conclusion was the right wing engage in fake news. And they analyzed three countries, and India was one of them. So again, there were severe problems with the science behind the data modeling and the number of sample sets that they took in order to come up with such a sweeping generalization. First of all, you don't even know what, you know, how would you even define right wing? What is the core set of values that define right wing? I don't know. But, you know, when you come up with something as broad as this, this is like saying, if you say Bengalis love Sourav Ganguly, you know, that's okay. That's fine. You know, there are ways of establishing that. You might be right too. But when you take something as high level and almost like this is the kind of This is the kind of subjective statement that people on social media like to make, and which is fine. But when somebody actually claims that they have a data-driven study which establishes this, this data-driven study definitely needs a lot of scrutiny, because you are making an almost a prejudicial kind of statement in this case. So it's like, okay, so it's like saying if there's a study which goes and says that Bengalis avoid physical labor. Okay, that's the result of the study. Now, I would really, really, really want to analyze the experimental setup before they came. Now, it could be, you could just think that, I think based on I've observed 5 people in my life and all Bengalis they avoid hard labor. That's fine. But if you come and tell me that there's a scientific study, then that scientific study needs to be pretty strong in order to support such this is not a subtle point. This is a broad club. So, your data numbers need to be very solid, and they haven't been. So before we talk about this a little bit more, my own personal experience with BBC. So and I've forgotten the year, it was possibly 2007 or so. There was, I don't know if you recall, Vikram, there was this video of some comedian who was, this is a bizarre thing. And I don't think the video is there, but he was making fun of Mahatma Gandhi by doing a pole dance.
Oh, no. I've never heard of it.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. So, this was 2007 stuff. And so, I had written a post where I said, you know what? This is idiotic. This is moronic. It's not even funny. But again, it's, should this guy be banned? They're talking about banning. The same kind of shit that usually happens when something like this happens. This was, of course, when we had an UPA government. So the BBC approached me because, I was on the same page. I was naive then. I didn't realize that. But they called me to this talk show on their radio. And we discussed. And I basically repeated what I had written in the blog. That, this is offensive. This really is offensive. And, this isn't even funny. I don't even know what the point of this is. But, he has his freedom of expression. He's doing it. And people like it. They like it. People don't like it. You have an option. Just don't go and visit his page. Don't share his work. That's it. It was the first time. Second time that I appeared on BBC was when Shilpa Shetty was on Big Boss. Now, I fully agree that I am a world expert on Shilpa Shetty. So, having me on the show was great research on their part, because as I said, if you're going to have 3 people in the world to talk about Shilpa Shetty, I have to be one of them. So that was the second time I was on BBC. The third time I was on BBC, so the way they worked was before they recorded, they would have somebody call and they would ask you what your stance is on the show, for the show. So then I think the topic was something like India is being torn asunder by caste violence. So I said, no, I don't agree. We do have a caste problem, but it's not that the country is being torn asunder by the way, this is still UPA government. So for those of you who think I'm a BJP shrill, I would have said, if the shoe was on the other foot, I'm pretty sure other people would have said, yeah, sure, the country is being split, ripped apart by communal and caste violence. But no, that was not the Congress problem at all. So I said, no, there's no problem. And this guy I could see was trying to push me to change my opinion. He was saying, are you sure? And I was like, is that really the what? And I cottoned on to the fact that he was basically trying to get me to change my, what I was saying. But I kind of stuck to my guns. I don't ever change my opinions on anything. And then what happened was these guys never called me to the show again. This was a pre-call. When the episode was being recorded, they didn't call me. And that was the last time I appeared with BBC. Again, no hard feelings. That's fine. But the thing is that BBC has a stance, has a political stance. Okay. But you can say so do Times Now and so do, every news channel. That's fine. But BBC is usually, for some strange reason, held up to a much higher standard. That they're considered to be the arbiters of neutrality. And some of it is because, I think we still have this colonial thing in us, in Indians, that we think that the white British man is by nature superior and more fair, and more, it's not cricket. But that's not true, because I've seen that's not true. They're not much different from Times Now. They might be a little bit more sophisticated, but that doesn't still change the fact that they're not much different. So I remember, Nidhi Razdan saying once Op India had done this expose that, now Op India is teaching journalism to BBC. I don't know about you, man, but that sounds tremendously Brahminical to me. If I might
which
now
needs
use
to be
that
smashed, I remember right.
Which needs to be smashed. To say that somehow that it, you know, the criticism, if Nidhi had criticized Op India and said, you know what, Op India's debunking is also fallacious, that's a perfectly fine thing to say. But if your logic is, oh boy, these guys are teaching journalism to BBC, then it is the precisely this whole Brahminical attitude that some people, by virtue of their privilege, by virtue of their, in this case, origin, color of skin, I would say, because the association is with white Britishers, that they somehow are more superior than people who are considered to be, you know, saffron, of the tone saffron. So again, this is my problem, that in order to debunk, the debunking of the study was done in a scientific way. Okay, the study was scientific. The arguments against it were scientific. Now, again, you can have counter arguments to that. That's a fair debate. Okay. But if your only counter is that Op India is teaching BBC journalism, then man, you are the troll over here. You are the person who's reducing, you're reducing a debate to this kind of, you know, this is the lowest common denominator, right? You know, this is the way of basically saying, I can't argue with you on facts. So, you know, who the F are you? I am better, or in this case, BBC is better. And I personally know from my own experience that that's not true. That is not true. Okay. They are as good or as bad as anybody else. And that's perfectly fine because they're human beings. They have a political stance. And, you know, they have a platform for it. But I'm not the guy who's going to elevate BBC or, you know, NBC or Washington Post or New York Times to be anything better than anything that we have. And if your argument against anyone is not, and this is a fact-based, argument. Okay, there are some cases in which the argument itself is emotional. In that case, I understand something like this. I might not approve of it, but I understand. But when you're basically debating science versus science, to say, you know, who are you to teach this guy, it just goes to show, I repeat, the whole Brahminical attitude to people who use this word as a pejorative.
Didn't it strike you strange that somebody from NDTV is coming around defending BBC? While I don't think there was any British journalist who actually countered that. In fact, BBC took down that article.
Yeah, so BBC has continuously, it's up again. So BBC has been continuously been changing the article, the underlying facts. Okay. They've been, so they've said, we are continuously refining our methodology. Okay. Which really reminds me of the way I used to do a V equal to IR Ohm's law experiment. Okay. So you first come up with a graph. You first come up with a graph which shows that the curve V by I is constant because it's RV is equal to IR Ohm's law. So that's you know, we know what the result is going to be. However, when we are collecting the data, what happens is the resistance keeps on changing because the temperature is increasing, right? So it's not a straight line, but it has to be the straight line because otherwise they'll say it's wrong. So when and if the professor is smart enough and said, well, how did you get a straight line? It should not be a straight line because, you know, the temperature of the resistance was changing, so it can't be a constant slope. Then you go, well, hold on, sir. Now let me go and, you know, clarify by methodology. So that's exactly what's going on with BBC in this case.
I have a completely unrelated anecdote which just came to my mind. So I was working in Satyam at that time, and this was exactly on the day the news of the scam broke out.
Okay.
And I was wearing a T-shirt which said, when all else fails, manipulate the data. It was so... one in a million coincidence that I would wear that particular T-shirt. But that's the line which came to my mind when you mentioned what BBC is doing. When all else fails, manipulate the data.
Right. So if everything about their data study, if everything is above board, then why change the data study? The fact that you're continuously refining and changing it goes to show that you yourself are discovering methodological problems with it at this point of time. And again, it's okay, all right? I mean, okay, you did a study. That's a thing with any academic research. Somebody can always attack you on your methodology. In this case, some of their problems were like really egregious, I would say. But even if it was not this amateurish, it can always be attacked. You can always issue clarifications. But I'll come back to the thing. But your defense cannot be, I am BBC, so shut the F up. That cannot be. And again, BBC didn't say this, by the way. Incidentally, NDTV said this. So this is the difference, I would say. And I'm, you know, perhaps there is a difference between BBC and everybody else. That at least BBC is hearing what people are saying, and they are changing their data, which is not a great thing to do. But at least they're not saying, you know what, that data and everything there is fine because I'm BBC and I said so. Okay. But moving along, and this is important, and you know, this aspect is often not, you know, we discuss fake news a lot nowadays. I think every LitFest has one panel. It's become mandatory to have one panel on Ruskin Bond and one panel on fake news. And you always have the usual suspects. So this fake news panel is always the one that's very well attended, because, you know, ultimately it will break down into barbs fired against each other. And that's what the crowd comes to like, you know, come to watch. And that's what LitFest organizers also want, because it ensures footfalls. One of the LitFests I went to had Rani Mukherjee, who was promoting her latest movie at that point in time, which had nothing to do with books, though. But, you know, of course, a lot of people came. Even I went to see Rani Mukherjee, of course. Anyways, so, you know, this year has been like a terrible year for me personally. I mean, the only year that I can think of which went this bad was the first, the 1994, when I sat for my joint entrance exam and I didn't do well and I didn't get computer science and I got metallurgy. That year was, again, a pretty traumatic year of my life. And after that, I've kind of had, you know, some good years, some bad years. This year was absolutely terrible for me in every respect. As I like to say, the high point of me for this year was two high points, really. One was winning a $10 raffle ticket at work, and the second was winning the scariest Halloween costume. These two things have been the highlight of my year. So it should tell you what the rest of the year, how it went. Anyways, this is not me complaining about my year. That's going to be on 30th December, my birthday. So what I did was I started reading about, like, when people have bad years and when you're like when you're at my age, you start getting a little spiritual. But unfortunately, I'm not spiritually inclined. So what I started doing was I started reading a little bit about philosophy. So Western philosophy, some Eastern philosophy, mostly Western philosophy, because those are the books that I have here. And so what I was, again, it's not so much as a way to, put a balm on my wounds, but more as an academic trying to understand how Western thought has developed. So one of the interesting things, again, is the nature of truth. So this is particularly relevant when you're thinking of fake news. So, and I'm oversimplifying here mainly because of the fallibility of my own senses, and we'll come to that, but there is, Vikram, there is the universal set, the you of all true things. Okay. Now, there is a you dash, which is the set of all true things that we may perceive. Okay. So what do you mean by we may perceive? We may perceive. So perception is through our senses, right? Sight, eyes, or whatever we have. And philosophers defined another sixth sense, which is not the sixth sense that we think of, but mathematics, right? So by using mathematics, we can perceive things which we will not be able to perceive with our senses, like stuff which goes on in the quantum world or stuff that's going on in distant galaxies, correct? We know them to be truth because we can mathematically reason about them, correct? And we know them to be truth when we observe them, we'd say, okay, we had this theory and it was confirmed by experiment. So then we say that is definitely in the realm of the observable universe. So let's call this U prime. So here's the set of all true things, which is U. And here's the set of all things that we can perceive using some kind of transitive closure operation, using our senses and using mathematics. Now, what is U minus U prime? Is that a null set? So metaphysicists will tell you that it is not a null set, that there are lots of things. And I think I've forgotten the line from Hamlet, which basically says that there are things in your philosophy you know, there. So there is this U minus U prime, which is the supernatural, which cannot be explained, but it exists. That's what the metaphysicists say. The pure empiricists or the pure rationalists say there is no U minus U prime. Okay. U minus U prime is garbage. So you can put anything you want there. You can put astral projections, you can put God, you can put anything in U minus U prime. And you can say, you know what, it's valid because it's a U minus U prime. Anyways, so now let's look at U prime. So even with U prime, what we observe, now let's take mathematics outside the equation. And as we can see, even in the case of BBC, even the mathematics is kind of fungible. But let's just keep that for the side. So even with our, what we perceive with our senses, we have all our senses, like my vision is not 20/20. So we have limitations of our sensory perceptions, purely physical limitations. Okay, as we get older, we see less, we hear less. That's part of it. Then if you purely consider your eyes and your ears, your taste and smell, everything as sensors, there is a controller for all those sensors. And those controllers for all those sensors, they also have certain limitations. So let's say we don't all of us react to the same temperature. So let's say we are having ice cream. For some people, the coldness of the ice cream causes irritation in the tooth. For some people, it doesn't. Right. So even though the temperature and the impulse or the input is the same, our senses perceive them differently because the controller is different. Some people can take enormous amount of physical pain, and some people start crying when an ant bites them. Again, the intensity of the pain is same, but the sensor's controller logic is different for both of them. Which one is the truth? Are you supposed to cry? Is that the fake news? When Karna gets bitten, and he has his Guru Parashuram, and he does not cry or scream, what does he do? You know, he basically blocks out his senses. So what does that mean? Does that mean, what is truth? I'm kind of amazed at the way, because this is the way Western philosophers put it. And if you look at the way autonomous driving and all these things work, this is precisely the way it works. This is precisely the way they make sense of the world. So you have the exact why I'm using things like sensor controllers and stuff. Now the final part of it is your own mathematical model of reality. So this is where your biases, your upbringing, everything comes in. And that's when, after being filtered through so many things, the final filter is your bias. Okay, your bias, your mental model, your prejudices. The way you label events, the way you have labeled events based on your experience, the way your neural network is kind of set up with the weights, and all of us have different weights because we have had different experiences. We have had different kinds of training sets given to us throughout our life. So finally, what we consider truth is what happens after these four or five layers of filtering. So that's why your notion of truth and my notion of truth is never going to be the same. That's why, you know, seen that in movies like Rashomon, that all of us have an individual perception of truth. So when somebody says fake news, okay, we know what they're trying to say, and this is not a philosophical question, but what they're ultimately trying to say is that your perception of reality is fake according to my perception of reality. And for me, that's absolutely valid. That is the state of the world. There's nobody who's actually evil in this case. Okay. It is true that your perception of reality is my perception of, is different from my perception of reality, that your truth is different from my truth. But that should not necessarily mean there is malignant intent behind that. That fakeness is, I would say, is inherent in the very nature that we perceive the truth. I apologize if this has become a little bit too philosophical, but this is the way I look at the philosophical underpinnings of what fake news is. Of course, the way fake news works in India is very different. So we all acknowledge the fact that when you have, and this happened a while ago, where they took a screen grab from a Bhojpuri movie and they showed like, this is what's going on. This we all know, you know, fake WhatsApp forwards, Photoshops, we kind of recognize them all as fake news because something that didn't happen, we are saying happened. But what about the other things? What about the fake news that our news media puts on, where they don't normally do that. They don't normally take which is untruth and pass it off as truth. What they do is they do it the other way around. They suppress the truth. So I remember there was this example, you know, in Calcutta, there was, and somebody told me this, that there was a communal riot essentially going on at one place, long time ago. Okay. And it was happening pretty much in a main area of Calcutta, but it was, did not make the news. Pretty much everybody decided we will not carry this in the larger interests of communal harmony. Now, what would you call it? You can say, you know what, they did the right thing. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. That's an important thing. Ultimately, perhaps we are not ready for the truth. But is the suppression of truth also fake news? And are there good reasons why we need fake news? In this case, maybe that was the right decision to take. That I have said this before. Just because something is right does not necessarily mean we should do it. So in some cases, the suppression of news might ultimately be good. But again, who decides? Okay. Who decides? Are we privileged? Are we mature enough as a society to get truth as it happens? Or do we need a filter? These are very important questions. And sometimes what happens is just the discussion on fake news becomes kind of degenerates to right-wing does fake news. Okay, even BBC, even NDTV, but they don't want to dig a little bit deep into it. They don't want to go into the intellectual underpinnings of what fake news actually is. Is fake news always bad? Not really. So, and why does fake news happen? Why do people want to believe in what they read in WhatsApp? Well, first of all, it confirms their biases. So it confirms their mental model of truth. So we always latch on to that kind of sensory. Yeah, you know, that's why Shah Rukh Khan fans want to see more Shah Rukh Khan movies, because we want familiarity. So if we believe that, you know, if we have a certain world belief, we will obviously choose things that will allow us to intensify and solidify our mental model. We will immediately reject, our senses will immediately reject any kind of attempt to change that mental model. That's again very, very inherent to the mechanics of learning. But fake news also stems from our lack of belief in official news sources. I think time and time again, people have seen that we get facts which are not really facts, that things are at least suppressed. And Mr. Sardesai has a nice way of saying this, you know, tyranny of distance and something yes. About moral compass, which I call demagnetization of the moral compass. So it basically says, you know what, if something's going on in Bengal and I, you know, the politics of that I don't agree with, and showing it, you know, kind of weakens my narrative, then you know what, tyranny of distance, I'm not going to go there. So this is the way that fake news works. This is fake news when, and again, you could say this is fake news for a good reason, and that's perhaps what Mr. Sardesai would say. But that doesn't mean that it's not fake news, that suppressing news is also fake news. Suppressing truth is also is also some kind of fakeness. And this kind of fakeness is built into our very perception of the world, the history books that we read. Do you think all of them are true? No, they aren't. There are multiple interpretations of what happened. There are diametrically opposite interpretations of what happened. And we kind of end up accepting this as truth. So if you want to, you know, if you really want fake news, you don't need to go to postcard.news. Open up your favorite history book that you read in your class 9 and 10. They have fake news straight right up there. And that's why, and before Mr. Arun Shori went rogue, and realized that the people he had been fighting against have been his friends, he was one of the first persons who actually brought this up. The fact that how that how the Congress government, with the help of subservient historians, basically rewrote the entire history of India to conform with their worldview. He has written books on it. So if you're interested in knowing how is much of the things that you know as truth is essentially fake news, except it was not fake news per se, but it's fake news that happened before, feel free to read Mr. Oren Shuri's books. I mean, he's done a much deeper analysis of them than I could ever have done. But concluding, I want to conclude with this. I think the problem of fake news is again, it's a big problem, but it's not just a right-wing, left-wing problem. Everybody engages in it. For the right-wing, often because some of the right-wing is communal, that they want to provoke communal violence, the fake news is very action-oriented. So they will make up things that didn't happen. And the reason why they make those things up is to get people riled up so that they engage in violence. That's really been the right-wing way of doing things. It's also been the left-wing way of doing things too, by the way. Extreme left-wing way of doing things also. So I've discussed this in a previous podcast where there was this Ananda Margis, who were these Hindu monks in robes who were lynched and murdered in broad daylight in downtown Calcutta in the 1980s, when the fake news, by the way, there was no WhatsApp then, this was 80s, that they were kidnapping children. So they were lynched, and the Marxist government, you know, Jyoti Basu and all these guys, they were like kind of very shut it off and saying, you know what, they were Ananda Margis, you know, all right, shit happens, I'm not going to waste any tears on this. This was really their attitude, and I'm being very diplomatic here. So it's not that it's just a prerogative of the right wing, as the BBC and NDTV want you to believe. But again, sometimes with extreme arms of any political spectrum, it's often to goad people into action. But that we understand, and sometimes that's the kind of fake news that's easy to debunk also. But then there is the more insidious fake news that happens in the center and happens to the left of center and happens to people who have positions of privilege. That is the ability to suppress news. That is the ability to color news and the ability to do it and basically say, this is the truth. You will never know what happens. There are various nice names for it. One is known as editorial discretion. But that's essentially what it is. It is the ability to filter what happened in a way that they like to believe that this is good for society. But ultimately, it might be sometimes good for society, as I said before. But also it because they're also compromised and because it aligns with their worldview. And we see it every day. Whenever I see Mr. Sardesai and I see him from his friends, you know, it's very obvious that what he's saying, and sometimes what he's saying is then debunked by other people, because at least now we have both right-wing and left-wing media in this country. Before that, it was entirely of one tone and one tone only. I think the noise has been amplified as a result. People have become more radical on both sides. But at least the fake news of one guy gets debunked by the other somehow. And again, the other guy will always say, they're Op India, they're not BBC. But you know, both sides play the game. So I don't think anybody comes out looking great in this. So that's about it for today. I would like to hear your opinion on this. Please feel free to write in with your comments and on Twitter too. Kind of enjoyed bringing this to you because I once had a plan to write a nonfiction book about truth and about these things. And I just, there's just so many things I need to do with my life. I don't think I'll ever be able to write these things down. So this podcast is providing me a great avenue to get these things out there. So that's it for me today. So Vikram, you want to?
Yep. Anything else to plug before we wrap up? Because you're there on at Great Bong.
Everybody knows I'm there at Great Bong. And do we have any watch song or any kind of Twitter poll today? Or
no, in fact, we don't have a Twitter poll. We didn't have a watch song. We'll probably make it up next week with both of them, or at least one.
We'll definitely do that because people ask for it. So I realize that people really, at least some people really like it. So I want to.
But here's a question I wanted to ask you. Did you get the reference to last week's show title?
Which was called, what again?
My heart is a banana. My heart was a banana.
No, I didn't.
Okay. It's Akela. A very poor joke taken from one of the old comedies I saw on TV. Basically, Mera Dil Tha Akela.
I said that's why I said
the Bazigar song.
No, I said right now Akela. So this, yeah, the banana Akela. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, and that's basically today's episode. And we're under an hour today. So we'll give back 5 minutes to you. And if you're still driving, you can probably listen to last week's episode. The podcast is available on talkingstuff.net/app. And it's available on all podcast players on both iOS and Android. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel too. You can just search for Talking Stuff Net. And of course, we are also on Twitter at Talking Stuff Net. Similarly on Facebook as well. You can also send in your tech questions to us on our WhatsApp number. That's 96525-STUFF. That is 96525-7833. Just send in whatever questions you have. And if your question gets featured in one of our videos or if we answer it, you stand to win not just answers. You also get to win some cool goodies. So do send it in. And for outside India, remember to add a +91 if you need to. So that's 96525-7833. So that's it for this week, and we'll see you next week too. Until then, Arnab, have a great long weekend.